British Guy Broadcasting presents Pride and Prejudice, voiced by Charlotte Strevens on behalf of MCS Agency. Universal Pictures presents, in association with Studio Canal, a working title production, directed by Joe Wright, with Keira Knightley as Elizabeth Bennett, Lizzie, and Matthew McFadyen as Mr. Darcy, Rosamund Pike as Jane, Simon Woods as Mr. Bingley, Brenda Blethyn and Donald Sutherland as Mr. and Mrs. Bennett, and Judy Dench as Lady Catherine de Bourgh. The sun slowly rises from behind a thick band of trees. The blinding rays spill over the treetops and shine down onto a flat stretch of meadowland. No flowers peep up from the grass, and not a cloud sits in the opaque sky. The early morning dew still hovers slightly on the air. A tall, slim young woman with peachy skin and strongly defined brows walks over the lush green grass engrossed in a book. She reaches the end of the chapter and closes it. She climbs down a short ladder to a narrow stone walkway to cross a band of water, the ducks and geese objecting as she passes. She reaches the back of the house and yard. In the distance, a line of Jersey cows are hurried along in single file. She makes her way past lines of white washing hanging out to dry. The young woman has a long, graceful neck, her chestnut hair captured behind in a bun. She walks around the outside of the house. Her simple, long brown dress accentuates her willowy figure. She passes an open door. Inside, a young girl is playing the piano. Another young woman watches two more girls tear down the stairs, exciting a shaggy wolfhound who wags his tail. The room is simply furnished, but homely. The long polished dining table is cluttered. The remains of a meal sit at one end, a straw bonnet with ribbons and pieces of clothing and fabrics all over the other. In the far corner of the room, through an open door and over the stone balustrade, the geese are being thrown handfuls of grain by the livestock man. The young woman appears from round the corner and walks up the stone steps to the front door. She stops to look at an older couple through a nearby window.
My dear Mr. Bennett, have you heard? Netherfield Park is let at last. Do you not want to know who has taken it?
But as you wish to tell me, my dear, I doubt I have any choice in the matter.
Entering the house, the young woman sees the young girls loitering in the passage.
Lady! Can you what have I told you about listening at the door?
Shh.
Mr. Bingley, right from the north.
He's single.
Mr. Bingley, apparently.
Well, how can that possibly affect them?
Oh, Mr. Bennett, how can you be so tiresome? You know, he must marry one of them.
So that is his desire in settling here.
You must go and visit him at once.
Good heavens. People.
The girls are all outside the door.
May not visit if you do not, as you well know, Mr. Bennett.
Listening, you never listen.
You must, Papa.
At once.
There's no need. I already have.
When? Oh, Mr. Bennett, how can you tease me so? Have you no compassion for my poor nerves?
Oh, you mistake me, my dear. I have the highest respect for them. They've been my constant companions these 20 years.
Papa.
Is he amiable?
Who?
Is he handsome?
Who?
He's sure to be handsome.
With 5,000 a year, it would not matter if he had warts and a leer.
Who's got warts?
I will give my hearty consent to his marrying whichever the girls he chooses.
So will he come to the ball tomorrow, Papa?
I believe so.
Mrs. Bennett kisses him. The house is thrown into an excited uproar. It's a double-fronted stone house with three floors and many windows, whose panes glint in the afternoon sun, framed rather attractively by two massive trees growing either side of the path leading up to the front door. The ballroom doors slowly open to reveal the dancing within. two long rows of couples and gaily dancing a reel, the younger Bennett girls among them. Jane and Lizzie sit around the perimeter chatting. A tiered chandelier filled with lit candles hangs from the middle of the ceiling. The fiddlers play from the balcony above, which runs all around the long room. Lydia and Kitty talk whilst energetically whirling round. Mrs. Bennett looks on indulgently from the sides.
Love every man in the room does not end the evening in love with you, that I am no judge of beauty.
All men.
No, they are far too easy to judge.
They're not all bad.
Humorous poppycocks in my limited experience.
One of these days, Lizzie, someone will catch your eye, and then you'll have to watch your tongue.
Two gentlemen and a petite lady come in and stand observing the dancing. When their presence is noticed, the room falls silent, and the assembled company part to make a space on the floor. An elderly, bespectacled man approaches them and inclines his head politely. They return the greeting.
How good of you to come.
So which of the painted peacocks is our Mr. Bingley?
Well, he's on the right, and on the left is his sister.
And the person with the quizzical brow?
That is his good friend, Mr. Darcy.
It's miserable, poor sir.
Miserable he may be, but poor he most certainly is not.
Tell me.
10,000 a year, and he earns half of Derbyshire.
The miserable half.
The visitors proceed down the length of the room, all assembled curtsy like a wave as they pass. Catching Lizzie's eye, Darcy looks away. Lizzie giggles. They take their places in front of the fireplace at the far end of the room, and the dancing resumes.
Oh, but Mr. Bennett, you must introduce him to the girls immediately.
Smile, Mr. Bennett.
Dancing down the room to where Jane is, Mrs. Bennett grabs her hand. With Jane and Lizzie behind her, she snakes her way through the crowd until she reaches Mr. Bingley. Mr. Bennett joins them with Mary and Charlotte Lucas.
Mary?
Mr. Bingley, my eldest daughter, you know. Mrs. Bennett, Miss Jane Bennett, Elizabeth and Miss Mary Bennett.
It is a pleasure. I have two others, but they're already dancing.
I'm delighted to make your acquaintance.
And may I introduce Mr. Darcy of Pemberley in Derbyshire.
They all curtsy. Darcy looks sour, not even a flicker of his quizzical eyebrows. Bingley smiles good-naturedly. Caroline looks disdainful. The dance comes to an end. The partners face each other, bow, and clap in appreciation.
How do you like it here in Hertfordshire, Mr. Bingley?
Very much.
The library at Netherfield, I've heard, is one of the finest in the country.
Yes, fills me with guilt. Not a very good reading here. Burbing out of doors. I can read, of course. And I'm not suggesting you can't read out of doors. Of course.
I wish I read more, but there always seems to be so many other things to do.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
Lydia and Kitty look for Mrs. Bennett.
You will never, ever, ever believe what we're about to tell you.
But tell me quickly,
my
lord.
I'm going to take the bed.
The next dance begins.
Oh, look! Jane's dancing with Mr. Bingley. Mr. Bingley.
Bingley is boyishly handsome with copper-red hair and is so struck by Jane he can hardly take his eyes off her. She is blonde and fair with rosy cheeks. She glides effortlessly through the dance.
Will you dance, Mr. Darcy?
Not if I can help it.
Lizzie stands beside him until it is polite to move, and then does so quickly. With distance between them, she slows to a gentle stroll around the room, observing Bingley's happy countenance. She spots Charlotte and makes a beeline for her. Caroline talks to Darcy.
Well, you'll help.
I didn't know you were coming to see me.
What's the matter?
We are a long way from Grosvenor Square, are we not, Mr. Darcy?
I've never seen so many pretty girls in my life.
You are dancing with the only handsome girl in the room.
She is the most beautiful creature I have ever beheld. But her sister Elizabeth is very agreeable.
Fairly tolerable, I dare say. Not handsome enough to tempt me. You'd better return to your partner and enjoy her smiles. You're wasting your time with me.
Hidden from view, Lizzie overhears Darcy's comments.
Count your blessings, Lizzie. If he liked you, you'd have to talk to him.
Precisely. As it is, I would not dance with him for all of Derbyshire, let alone the miserable half.
Lizzie and Charlotte merrily skip down the length of the room with their partners. All the Bennet girls are now dancing, and there is much laughter and enjoyment. Darcy coldly observes from the fireplace, his face an utter mask. Bingley continues to dance with Jane, mesmerised by her. Caroline looks as severe as Darcy watching the dancing. During the dance, Lizzie notices the way Jane glances at Bingley. He is enthralled by her. Lizzie smiles gleefully to herself. Mr. Bennet affectionately fans his wife's upturned face. Formally dressed in dark frock coat, stiff high collar and white silk cravat, Darcy makes his way through the crowd. At the end, everyone claps.
Miss Lucas is a most amusing young woman.
Oh, yes, I adore her. It is a pity she's not more handsome.
Mama?
Oh, but Lizzie will never admit that she's plain. Of course, it's my Jane who is considered the beauty of the county.
Mama,
when she was only 15, there was a gentleman so much in love with her that I was sure he would make her an offer. However, he did write her some very pretty verses.
And that put pain to it. I wonder who first discovered the power of poetry in driving away love.
I thought that poetry was the food of love.
Of a fine, stout love, it may. But if it is only a vague inclination, I'm convinced one poor sonnet will kill it stone dead.
So what do you recommend to encourage affection?
Dancing. Even if one's partner is barely tolerable.
Lizzie looks at him pointedly, bobs her head and walks off, a smile playing around her full lips. That night, hidden under the bedclothes, Jane lies facing Lizzie. They are both awake.
Mr. Bingley is just what a young man ought to be. Sensible, good humour.
Handsome, conveniently rich.
You know perfectly well I do not believe marriage should be driven by a thought of money.
And only the deepest love will persuade me into matrimony, which is why I will end up an old maid.
Do you really believe he liked me, Lizzie?
Jane, he danced with you most of the night and stared at you for the rest of it. But I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person. Now, you're a great deal too apt to like people in general, you know. All the world is good and agreeable in your eyes.
Not his friend. Oh, I still can't believe what he said about you.
Mr. Darcy. I'd more easily forgive his vanity had he not wounded mine. But no matter, I doubt we shall ever speak again.
Jane wriggles girlishly under the blankets. Through the bedroom window, a small round yellow moon shines all alone in the night sky. Breakfast is a lively affair.
And then he danced the third with Miss Lucas.
We were all there, dear.
Oh, poor thing. It is a shame she's not more handsome. There's a spinster in the making and no mistake. The fourth with a Miss King of little standing, and the fifth again with Jane.
If he'd had any compassion for me, he would have sprained his ankle in the first set.
Oh, Mr. Bennet, the way you carry on, anyone would think our girls look forward to a grand inheritance. When you die, Mr. Bennet, which may in fact be very soon, our girls will be left without a roof over their head, nor a penny to their name.
Oh, Mama, please, it's 10 a.m.
A letter addressed to Miss Bennet, ma'am, from Netherfield Ward.
Praise the Lord. We are safe, Neil.
Oh, haste, Jane, make haste. Oh, happy day.
She opens it.
It is from Caroline Bingley. She has invited me to dine with her.
Her brother will be dining out.
Dining out?
Can I take the carriage?
Where? Let me see that.
It is too far to walk, Mama.
It's unaccountable of him dining out, indeed.
Mama, the carriage for Jane.
Certainly not. She'll go on horseback.
Horseback?
Pulling a cloth off the washing line, Lizzie runs up to the back door and hammers to be let in. Soaked to the skin, she dries her hair with it.
Now she'll have to stay the night, exactly as I predicted.
Good grief, woman. Your skills in the art of matchmaking are positively occult.
Though I don't think, Mama, you can reasonably take credit for making it rain.
Jane announces herself with a sneeze.
My kind friends will not hear of me returning home until I am better. Do not be alarmed, excepting a sore throat, a fever and a headache. There is nothing much wrong with me. This is ridiculous.
Well, if Jane does die, it would be a comfort to know it was in pursuit of Mr. Bingley.
People do not die of cold.
But she may well perish with the shame of having such a mother. I must get another fit at once.
Spurred into action, Lizzie sets off across country to Netherfield Hall. The sky above is stormy as she tramps past a solitary tree. At breakfast, Caroline reads a letter, Darcy, the newspaper.
Apparently Lady Bathurst is redecorating her ballroom in the French style. A little unpatriotic, don't you think?
A footman comes in.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
Caroline looks askance at Darcy. They remain seated when she walks into the room. Darcy suddenly stands up and bows.
Good Lord, Miss Elizabeth, did you walk here?
I did.
Lizzie's hair cascades over her shoulders. Her cheeks are glowing. Caroline is still seated.
I'm so sorry. How is my sister?
She's upstairs.
Thank you.
Lizzie hovers, expecting more. She curtsies and leaves the room.
My goodness, did you see her hem? 6 inches deep in mud. She looked positively medieval.
I feel such a terrible imposition. They're being so kind to me.
Don't worry, I don't know who is more pleased at your being here, Mama or Mr. Bingley.
Bingley knocks.
Thank you for tending to my sister so diligently. She is in far better comfort here than she would have been at home.
It's a pleasure. Not a pleasure that she's ill, of course not. It's a pleasure that she's here, being ill.
A sow is led into the back parlour at Longbourn.
Not going to be famous, our pig. Back of the back, not related to the learned pig of Norwich. Now that pig is...
Mr. Bennet, yes. It's all going according to plan. He's half in love with her already.
Who is Blossom?
Mr. Bingley. And he doesn't mind a bit that she hasn't a penny, for he has more than enough for the two of them. He dropped something. Then take his hook and get her introduced.
Oh! Captivated, Lydia with her mother and sister watch the militia march through the town. Soldiers in their striking scarlet jackets and black tricolour hats march abreast down the street carrying their muskets and flags. One particular young soldier catches Lydia's attention. Giggling with excitement, Lydia throws her white lacy handkerchief into the marching columns and is dismayed when it is ignored and trodden upon. In Netherfield, Lizzie sits quietly reading. Caroline is bored.
You write uncommonly fast, Mr. Darcy.
You're mistaken, I write rather slowly.
How many letters you must have occasion to write, Mr. Darcy? Letters of business, too. How odious, I should think them.
It is fortunate, then, that they fall to my lot instead of yours.
Do tell your sister that I long to see her.
I've already told her once my desire.
I do dote on her. I was quite in raptures at her beautiful little design for a table.
Perhaps you will give me leave to defer your raptures till I write again. At present, I have not room enough to do them justice.
Well, I think it's amazing you young ladies have the patience to be so accomplished.
What do you mean, Charles?
You all paint tables and play the piano and embroider cushions. I never heard of a young lady, but people say she is accomplished.
The word is indeed applied too liberally. I cannot boast of knowing more than half a dozen women in all my acquaintance that are truly accomplished.
Nor I, to be sure.
Goodness, you must comprehend a great deal in the idea.
I do.
Absolutely. She must have a thorough knowledge of music, singing, drawing, dancing, and the modern languages to deserve the word. And something in her air and manner of walking.
And of course she must improve her mind by extensive reading.
I'm no longer surprised at your knowing only 6 accomplished women. I rather want to know you're knowing any.
Are you so severe on your own sex?
I never saw such a woman. She would certainly be a fearsome thing to behold.
Miss Elizabeth, let us take a turn about the room.
Looking up, Lizzie swallows a smile. Caroline pointedly takes her hand and tucks it through her arm. Glancing in Darcy's direction, she gracefully walks with Lizzie around the room, showing off her soft, flattering gown, as against Lizzie's plain grey calico one.
It's refreshing, is it not, after sitting so long in one attitude?
And it is a small kind of accomplishment, I suppose.
Will you not join us, Mr. Darcy?
You can only have 2 motives, Caroline, and I would interfere with either.
What can he mean?
Our surest way of disappointing him will be to ask him nothing about it.
But do tell us, Mr. Darcy.
Either you are in each other's confidence and you have secret affairs to discuss, or you are conscious that your figures appear to the greatest advantage by walking. If the first, I should get in your way. If the second, I can admire you much better from here.
Shocking. How shall we punish him for such a speech?
You could always laugh at him.
Oh, no. Mr. Darcy is not to be teased.
Are you too proud, Mr. Darcy? And would you consider pride a fault or a virtue?
That I couldn't say.
Because we're doing our best to find fault in you.
Maybe it's that I find it hard to forgive the follies and vices of others, or their offences against me. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever.
Lizzie smiles at him.
Oh, dear, I cannot tease you about that. What a shame, for I dearly love to laugh.
A family trait, I think.
Caroline laughs at her own comments. They return to their seats. Darcy stops writing with his long quill pen and ponders their remarks, well aware of their presence behind him. Next day at breakfast, Bingley, Darcy and Caroline are interrupted by the footman.
A Mrs. Bennet, a Miss Bennet, a Miss Bennet, and a Miss Bennet.
Oh, for heaven's sake, are we to receive every Bennet in the country?
They sit.
What an excellent room you have, sir. Such expensive furnishings. Oh, I do hope you intend to stay here, Mr. Bingley.
Absolutely. I find the country very diverting. Don't you agree, Darcy?
I find it perfectly adequate, even if society is a little less varied than in town.
Less varied? Not at all. We dine with 24 families of all shapes and sizes. Sir William Lucas, for instance, is a very agreeable man. And a good deal less self-important than some people, half his rank.
Mr. Bingley, is it true that you have promised to hold a ball here at Netherfield?
A ball?
It would be an excellent way to meet new friends. You could invite the militia. They're excellent company.
Would you hold a ball?
Kitty.
When your sister is recovered, you shall name the day.
I think a ball is a perfectly irrational way to gain new acquaintance. It would be better if conversation, instead of dancing, were the order of the day.
Indeed, much more rational, but rather less like a ball.
Thank you, Mary.
What a fine, imposing place it is, to be sure, is it not, my dears? There's no house to equal it in the county.
Mr. Darcy?
Miss Bennet?
There she is.
Mr. Bingley, I don't know how to thank you.
You're welcome any time you feel the least bit poorly.
Thank you for your stimulating company. It has been most instructive.
Not at all. The pleasure is all mine.
Caroline nods artificially.
Mr. Darcy?
Miss Elizabeth?
Lizzie curtsies and is surprised when Darcy hands her into the carriage. She watches his retreating back, flexing the hand that held hers. At Longbourn...
Then there's one great long lash like a cow. Did you see him?
Order us a sirloin, Betsy. Just the one, mind, we're not made of money.
Oh. I hope, my dear, you've ordered a good dinner today. I have reason to expect an addition to our family party.
His name is Mr. Collins. He's the dreaded cousin.
Who's to inherit?
Indeed, everything, apparently.
Even my piano store belongs to Mr. Collins.
When?
He may turn us out of the house as soon as he pleases.
But why?
Because the estate passes directly to him and not to us poor females.
In his rector's hat, holding a box and books, he stands at the door.
Mr. Collins at your service.
At dinner, he shovels in some potatoes and furtively looks around the table. Mrs. Bennet looks disagreeably back at him.
What a superbly featured room, and what excellent boiled potatoes. Many years since I've had such an exemplary vegetable. To which of my fair cousins should I compliment the excellence of the cooking?
Mr. Collins, we are perfectly able to keep a cook.
Excellent. I'm very pleased the estate can afford such a living. I'm honoured to have as my patroness Lady Catherine de Bourgh. You've heard of her, I presume. My small rectory abuts her estate, Rosings Park, and she often condescends to drive by my humble dwelling in her little phaeton and ponies.
Does she have any family?
One daughter, the heiress of Rosings and very extensive property. I've often observed to Lady Catherine that her daughter seemed born to be a duchess, for she has all the superior graces of elevated rank. These are the kind of little delicate compliments which are always acceptable to the ladies and which I conceive myself particularly bound to pay.
How happy for you, Mr. Collins, to possess the talent for flattering with such delicacy.
Do these pleasing attentions proceed from the impulse of the moment, or are they the result of previous study?
They arise chiefly from what is passing at the time, and though I do sometimes amuse myself with arranging such little elegant compliments, I always wish to give them as unstudied an air as possible.
Oh, believe me, no one would suspect your manners to be rehearsed.
Lizzie pats Lydia's back.
After dinner, I thought I might read to you all for an hour or two. I have with me Fordyce's sermons, which speak very eloquently on all matters moral.
Lizzie and Jane try not to laugh.
Are you familiar with Fordyce's sermons, Miss Bennet?
He turns to Jane. Later, in the drawing room...
Mrs. Bennet, you do know that I have been bestowed by the good grace of Lady Catherine de Bourgh a parsonage of no mean size.
I have become aware of the fact.
Well, it is my avowed hope that soon I may find a mistress for it, and I have to inform you that the eldest Miss Bennet has captured my special attention.
Oh, Mr. Collins. Unfortunately, it is incumbent upon me to hint that the eldest Miss Bennet is very soon to be engaged.
Engaged?
But Miss Lizzie, next to her in both age and beauty, would make anyone an excellent partner. Do not you agree, Mr. Collins?
Indeed. Indeed. Very agreeable alternative.
He reassesses the situation. It's a busy day in town. The soldiers are looking at horses in the middle of the high street. A fiddler entertains. Chickens run amok. Jane and Lizzie walk quickly along when a handkerchief blowing upon the ground is picked up by the very soldier who caught Lydia's eye.
Mr. Collins, the sort of man who makes you despair of the entire sex.
Yours, I believe.
You are.
I picked up my handkerchief too. Did you drop yours on purpose, Lizzie?
Mr. Wickham's a lieutenant.
An enchanted lieutenant.
What are you up to, Lizzie?
I just happened to be looking for some ribbon.
Wait, for the ball.
Shall we all look for some ribbon together?
Wickham catches Lizzie's eye too.
Good afternoon, Mr. James.
Good afternoon, Miss
Lizzie. I shan't even browse. I can't be trusted. I have very poor taste in ribbons.
Only a man truly confident of himself would admit to that.
No, it's true. And buckles. When it comes to buckles, I'm lost.
Dear, oh dear, you must be the shame of the regiment.
What, laughing stock?
What do your superiors do with you?
Ignore me. I'm of next to no importance, so it's easily done.
Lizzie, lend me some money.
You already owe me a fortune, Lizzie.
Allow me to oblige.
Oh, no, Mr. Wickham, please.
By magic, he produces a coin for Lydia.
Help these round
I insist.
Charmed, Lizzie smiles. They all walk along the riverbank.
I'm pretty the French.
Where are
you
cooking?
So do I.
Look, Mr. Bingley.
Mr. Bingley!
I was just on my way to your house.
Mr. Bingley, how do you like my ribbons for your ball?
Very beautiful.
She is. Look at her. She's blooming.
Oh, Lydia.
Be sure to invite Mr. Wickham. He is a credit to his profession.
Lydia, you can't invite people to other people's balls.
Darcy gallops off.
Of course, you must come, Mr. Wickham. If you'll excuse me, ladies, enjoy the day.
Turning his horse round, Bingley rides after him.
You plan to go to the Netherfield Ball, then, Mr. Wickham?
Perhaps. How long has Mr. Darcy been a guest there?
About a month. Forgive me, but are you acquainted with him? With Mr. Darcy?
Indeed, I've been connected with his family since infancy. You may well be surprised, Miss Elizabeth, especially given our cold greeting this afternoon.
Well, I hope that your plans in favour of Meryton will not be affected by your relations with the gentleman.
Oh, no, it is not for me to be driven away. If he wishes to avoid seeing me, he must go. Not I.
I must ask, Mr. Wickham, what is the manner of your disapproval of Mr. Darcy?
My father managed his estate. We grew up together, Darcy and I. His father treated me like a second son, loved me like a son. We were both with him the day he died. With his last breath, his father bequeathed me the rectory in his estate. He knew I had my heart set on joining the church. But Darcy ignored his wishes and gave the living to another man.
But why?
Jealousy. His father... Well, he loved me better and Darcy couldn't stand it.
How cruel.
So now I'm a poor foot soldier, too lowly even to be noticed.
Self-deprecatingly, Wickham smiles. Lizzie looks sorry for him. Betsy sings as she distributes laundry.
Oh, breathe in! I can't anymore, you're hurting!
Kitty tightens Lydia's corset.
Betsy! Betsy!
Betsy goes into Jane and Lizzie's room and lays out a pair of shoes, long evening gloves and some clothes on the table at the foot of the bed. Jane is dressing Lizzie's hair.
I still think there must have been a misunderstanding.
Oh, Jane, do you never think ill of anybody?
Well, how could Mr. Darcy do such a thing?
I'll discover the truth from Mr. Bingley at the ball this evening.
If it is not true, let Mr. Darcy contradict it himself. Till he does, I hope never to encounter him.
Poor unfortunate Mr. Wickham.
On the contrary, Wickham is twice the man Darcy is.
And let us hope a rather more willing dancer.
In the mirror, they giggle. Lizzie is as dark as Jane is fair. The carriages arrive thick and fast at Netherfield Hall. The guests in their fashionable silks and satins are helped from the coaches by liveried footmen. With no change in his dark apparel, Mr. Collins climbs down from his carriage and purposefully makes his way inside the magnificent hall. He is all face and high forehead, short crop hair, his deep-set round eyes forever on the move. Being so short, he is dwarfed by the many guests milling around the anterooms waiting patiently to be announced, along with the Bennets. He worms his way inside.
May I say what an immense pleasure it is to see you again, Mr. Bingley.
Mrs. Bennet.
Miss Bingley.
Charming.
It's Lizzie and Jane's turn.
I'm so pleased you're here.
So am I.
And how are you? Miss Elizabeth. Are you looking for someone?
No, not at all. I was just admiring the general splendour.
It is breathtaking, Mr. Bingley.
Good.
Caroline elbows Bingley in the ribs to let them move on. Introductions over, Lizzie starts looking in earnest. She scans the guests and gazes up the stairs. Her parents circulate.
Mr. Bingley, I guess I never met a more pleasant gentleman in all my years. Did you see how he dotes on them? Dear Jane... always doing what's best for her family.
Still looking, she walks into the room where the musicians play. Lizzie is dressed in her finest white gown, as are all the ladies, her hair piled prettily on top of her head. She searches in vain.
Charlotte! Lizzie! Have you seen Mr. Wickham?
No. Perhaps he's through here.
Holding hands, they walk into the adjoining rooms and look some more.
Lizzie,
Mr. Wickham is not here.
Oh,
apparently he has been detained.
Detained where?
He must be here.
There you are.
Mr. Collins.
They all curtsy.
Perhaps you will do me the honour, Miss Elizabeth.
Oh. I did not think you danced, Mr. Collins.
I do not think it incompatible with the office of a clergyman to indulge in such an innocent diversion. In fact, several people, with her ladyship included, have complimented me on my lightness of foot.
Trying to keep a straight face, Lizzie partners Mr. Collins. Jane is two places down the line. They bow, walk around each other, then move up the line and repeat the sequence. Mr. Collins eyeballs Lizzie intently as they turn. She grits her teeth and tries not to openly laugh at him. Conversation is broken by the dancing.
Apparently your Mr. Wickham has been called on some business to town.
To be sure, dancing is of little consequence to me, but it does afford the opportunity to lavish me. Lavish upon one's partner.
And my informant tells me that you would have been less inclined.
Delicate attentions, which is my.
But you'd be less inclined to be engaged, were it not for the. Were it not for the presence in Netherfield of a certain gentleman.
Which is my primary object of the evening.
The gentleman barely warrants the name.
It is my intention, if I may be so bold, to remain close to you throughout the evening.
Stunned, Lizzie gazes at him. Laughing, she walks off the floor with Charlotte. Darcy suddenly stands in front of her.
May I have the next dance, Miss Elizabeth?
May.
They politely bow and he walks off. Lizzie grabs Charlotte's hand and rushes her off to a quiet corner.
Did I just agree to dance with Mr. Darcy?
I dare say you'll find him very amiable, Lizzie.
It would be most inconvenient since I have sworn to loathe him for all eternity.
Opposite one another, Lizzie and Darcy bow. Stepping towards each other, they turn and change places. Holding each other's hands, they walk round in a circle before breaking away.
I love this dance.
Indeed, most invigorating.
It's your turn to say something, Mr. Darcy. I talked about the dance. Now you ought to remark on the size of the room or the number of couples.
I'm perfectly happy to oblige. Please advise me of what you would like most to hear.
That reply will do for present. Perhaps by and by I may observe that private balls are much pleasanter than public ones. For now we may remain silent.
Their conversation is broken by the sequence of the moves.
You talk as a rule while dancing?
No, I prefer to be unsociable and taciturn. Makes it all so much more enjoyable, don't you think?
Tell me, do you and your sisters very often walk to Meryton?
Yes, we often walk to Meryton. It's a great opportunity to meet new people. In fact, when you met us, we just had the pleasure of forming a new acquaintance.
Mr. Wickham is blessed with such happy manners. He is sure of making friends. Whether he's capable of retaining them is less certain.
He's been so unfortunate as to lose your friendship. And I dare say that is an irreversible event.
It is. Why do you ask such a question?
To make out your character, Mr. Darcy.
And what have you discovered?
Very little. I hear such different accounts of you as puzzle me exceedingly.
I hope to afford you more clarity in the future.
Using their eyes, they spar with each other. After more graceful turns and a figure of eight, they end up back where they started. Bowing deeply, they clap. Lizzie curtsies gravely at Darcy and walks off, leaving him looking solemnly after her. Mr. Collins accosts Lizzie.
Mr.
that Mr. Darcy of Pemberley in Derbyshire?
I believe so.
I must make myself known to him immediately.
But
he's
sir,
the nephew of my esteemed patroness, Lady Catherine.
Mr. Collins, you will consider it an impertinence.
Mr. Darcy.
Standing behind him.
Mr. Darcy. Mr. Darcy.
He finally turns round.
Good evening.
What interesting relatives you have, Miss Elizabeth.
The implication is clear in Caroline's face. Lizzie curtsies and walks off. She sees Mary taking a turn at the piano. Mr. Bennett intervenes.
You've delighted us long enough. Let the other young ladies have a turn.
He closes the lid. Mr. Collins is looking around like a ferret. Caroline and Bingley converse.
They have a beautiful grey. Of course, Caroline's a much better rider than I. Of course.
Mrs. Bennett sits happily gossiping.
Yes, we fully expect a most advantageous marriage. And my Jane Arundel must throw her sisters in the way of...
Mr. Collins doubles back on his search. Lydia and Kitty lurch past him with their cups full of punch. Sir William Lucas smiles benignly as he wanders about. Lydia and Kitty are now dancing with the soldiers.
Clearly my family are having a competition to see who can expose themselves to the most ridicule.
Well, at least Bingley has not noticed.
No. I think he likes her very much.
But does she like him? There are few of us who are secure enough to be really in love without proper encouragement. Bingley likes her enormously. Might not do more if she does not help him on.
But she's just shy and modest. If he cannot perceive her regard, he is a fool.
We are all fools in love. He does not know her character as we do. She should move fast, snap him up. There is plenty of time for us to get to know him after the match.
I can't help feeling that at any point this evening, someone's going to produce a piglet to make us chase it.
Going through the motions, Caroline dances with Darcy. Mrs. Bennett flicks a speck of fruit cup from her spoon on an unsuspecting gentleman.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry. Do forgive me.
She continues ambling along and passes a preoccupied Mr. Collins pulling the petals from a daisy one by one. He smells the stump thoughtfully. Mr. Bennett, resplendent in his black velvet frock coat, his flowing white locks gathered at the back with a black ribbon, finds a distressed Mary and gives her a comforting cuddle.
I've been practicing it all week. Hi, Willie.
Leaning against a quiet, shadowy wall, Lizzie reflects upon the evening. It is dawn when the Bennett's open-topped carriage finally departs. Mr. Bingley and Caroline wave from the balcony.
Mr. Bennett, wake up! Oh, I've never had such a good time in my life!
Charles, you cannot be serious.
Caroline looks at him severely and goes inside. Bingley gazes forlornly after the carriage.
We'll be having a wedding here at Netherfield in less than 3 months, if you ask me, Mr. Bennett.
Mr. Bennett!
Mary, please.
At breakfast, Mrs. Bennett breaks an egg into a glass of milk. A dish of scones is brought to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Mr. Collins comes down the stairs and hovers at Mrs. Bennett's side. Everyone ignores him.
Mrs. Bennett, I was hoping if it would not trouble you that I might solicit a private audience with Miss Elizabeth in the course of the morning.
Everyone freezes.
Oh, yes, certainly. Lizzie will be very happy indeed. Everyone out. Mr. Collins would like a private audience with your sister.
No, wait, please. I beg you, Mr. Collins can have nothing to say to me that anybody need not hear.
No nonsense, Lizzie. I desire you will stay where you are. Everyone else to the drawing room. Mr. Bennett?
But...
Now?
Jane.
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 Jane is smiling as she leaves. Lizzie begs her father silently, mouthing the words, "Papa, stay." The door closes and Mr. Bennet reluctantly leaves by another way. Lizzie leaps up. Anne slowly sinks back down again as Mr. Collins approaches her and holds out a little pink wild flower. Lizzie averts her face and he slowly lays it down on the table in front of her.
Dear Miss Elizabeth, I'm sure my attentions have been too marked to be mistaken. Almost as soon as I entered the house, I singled you out as the companion of my future life. But before I am run away with my feelings, perhaps I may state my reasons for marrying. Firstly, that it is the duty of a clergyman to set the example of matrimony in his parish. Secondly, that I am convinced it will add greatly to my happiness. And thirdly, that it is at the urging of my esteemed patroness, Lady Catherine, that I select a wife. My object in coming to Longbourn was to choose such a one from among Mr. Bennet's daughters, for I am to inherit the estate, and such an alliance will surely suit everyone. And now, nothing remains but for me to assure you in the most animated language of the violence of my affection.
Mr. Collins!
And that no reproach on the subject of fortune will cross my lips once we're married.
You are too hasty, sir. You forget that I have given no answer.
I must add that Lady Catherine will thoroughly approve when I speak to her of your modesty, economy, and other amiable qualities.
Sir, I am honoured by your proposal, but I regret that I must decline it.
I know ladies don't seek to seem too eager.
Mr. Collins, I am perfectly serious. You could not make me happy, and I'm convinced I'm the last woman in the world who could make you happy.
I flatter myself, cousin, that your refusal is merely a natural delicacy. Besides, you should take into account that despite your manifold attractions, it's by no means certain that another offer of marriage may ever be made to you.
Mr. Collins!
So I must conclude that you simply seek to increase my love by suspense.
Sir!
According to the usual practice of elegant females.
Sir! I am not the sort of female to torment a respectable man. Please understand me. I cannot accept you.
Lizzie abruptly leaves the room as the door bursts open and all the Bennets see Mr. Collins down on one knee.
Headstrong, foolish child.
Mrs. Bennet chases after her. Only Mary remains straight-faced.
Don't worry, Mr. Collins. We'll have this little hiccup dealt with immediately.
Back in the house.
Mr. Bennet, we're all in an uproar. You must come and make Lizzie marry Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins has proposed to Lizzie, but she vows she will not have him. And now the danger is, Mr. Collins may not have Lizzie.
What am I to do?
Well, come and talk to her. Now!
Lizzie is down by the lake, looking into the water. Startled by a noise, the geese fly off. She turns. Her mother and father approach.
Tell her you insist upon them marrying.
Papa, please.
You will have this house.
I can't marry
you. And save your sisters from destitution.
I can't.
Go back now and say you've changed your mind.
No.
Think of your family.
You cannot make me.
Mr. Bennet, say something.
Charles, your mother insists on you marrying Mr. Collins.
Yes, I shall never see her again.
Well, Lizzie, from this day onward, you must be a stranger to one of your parents.
Who will maintain you when your father is dead?
Your mother will never see you again if you do not marry Mr. Collins, and I will never see you again if you do.
Mr. Bennet!
Thank you, Papa.
Relieved, Lizzie returns to the house. Mrs. Bennet follows her.
Ungrateful child! I shall never speak to you again! Not that I take much pleasure in talking. People who suffer as I do from nervous complaints can have no pleasure in talking to anybody. Jane?
Jane sits dispiritedly on the stairs.
What's the matter? Jane?
She lets Lizzie see the letter in her hand. A woebegone expression on his face, Bingley turns to look at his sister sitting quietly satisfied next to him. Darcy, too, is pensive as he looks out of the carriage window as it gently rolls down the drive away from Netherfield Hall. It's a beautiful sunny day. The liveried footmen walk up the balustraded stone steps to the terrace and go inside. Wearing white gloves, they throw a large sheet over a small, round, glass-topped table. In the other room behind them, the ruched blind is slowly lowered. They are closing up the house. The doors to the terrace are finally pulled to. Back at Longbourn, in a candle-lit bedroom, Lizzie is packing.
I don't understand what we're taking from Netherfield. Why would he not know when he was to return?
Read it, I don't mind.
Jane holds out the letter, which Lizzie takes.
Mr. Darcy is impatient to see his sister, and we are scarcely less eager to meet her again. I really do not think Georgiana Darcy has her equal for beauty, elegance, and accomplishment. So much so, I must hope to hereafter call her my sister.
Is that not clear enough?
Caroline sees that her brother is in love with you, and has taken him off to persuade him otherwise.
But I know her to be incapable of willfully deceiving anyone. It's far more likely that he does not love me and never has.
He loves you, Jane. Do not give up. Go to our aunt and uncle's in London. Let it be known you are there, and I am sure he will come to you.
Lizzie closes the trunk and kisses the top of Jane's head.
My sister, and try not to be a burden, dear.
Oh, Jane. Still, a girl likes to be crossed in love now and then. It gives her something to think of, and a sort of distinction amongst her companion.
I'm sure that will cheer her up, Papa.
Well, it's your turn now, Lizzie. You've turned down Collins. You're free to go off and be jilted yourself. What about Mr. Wickham? Then he's a pleasant fellow, and he'd do the job credibly.
Father.
And you have an affectionate mother, who would make the most of it.
In between the outhouses and stables, Lizzie sits aimlessly spiralling round and round on a single rope swing. As she spins, she catches sight of a cloaked figure out of the corner of her eye. She stops and smiles delightedly.
Charlotte!
My dear Lizzie, I've come here to tell you the news. Mr. Collins and I are engaged.
Engaged?
Yes.
Lizzie abruptly swings away and then stands up to face her.
To be married?
Yes, of course, Lizzie. What other kind of engaged is there? Oh, for heaven's sake, Lizzie, don't look at me like that. There is no earthly reason why I shouldn't be as happy with him as any other.
But he's ridiculous.
Oh, hush. Not all of us can afford to be romantic. I've been offered a comfortable home and protection. There's a lot to be thankful for.
Charlotte.
I'm 27 years old. I've no money and no prospects. I'm already a burden to my parents. And I'm frightened. So don't judge me, Lizzie. Don't you dare judge me.
Charlotte turns on her heels and walks off, leaving Lizzie severely shaken. She returns to spiralling round and round on the swing as a chicken flaps across the yard. She is still there, spiralling, when the cows return from their pasture. And there, when the hay is forked up into bales by the farmhands in the yard. She remains lost in her thoughts, spiralling. The rain begins and the whole yard empties, apart from the geese all huddled together in the far corner.
Dear Charlotte, thank you for your letter. I'm so glad the house, furniture and roads are all to your taste and that Lady Catherine's behaviour is friendly and obliging. What with your departure, James to London, and the militia to the north with the colourful Mr. Wickham, I must confess, the view from where I sit has been rather grey. As for the favour you ask, it is no favour at all. I would be happy to visit you at your earliest convenience.
Lizzie alights from the trap in front of a pretty stone rectory and gives Charlotte a warm embrace.
Oh.
Well, what happened about?
My wife encourages me to spend as much time in the garden as possible for the sake of my health.
My dear, I think our guest is tired after her journey.
And I plan many improvements, of course. I intend to throw out a bough and plant a lime walk. Oh, yes, I flatter myself that any young lady would be happy to be the mistress of such a house.
They are gone.
We shan't be disturbed here. This parlour is for my own particular use. Oh, Lizzie, it's such a pleasure to run my own home.
Charlotte, come here.
What's happened?
Charlotte?
Has the pig escaped again?
Oh, it's Lady Catherine. Come and see Lizzie.
Looking through the window.
Great news. Great news. We've received an invitation to visit Rosings this evening from Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
How wonderful.
Do not make yourself uneasy, my dear cousin, about your apparel.
Just put on whatever you've brought that's best.
Lady Catherine's never been averse to the truly humble.
One of the most extraordinary sights in all of Europe, is it not? The glazing alone costs upwards of £20,000. Come along. Come along.
A liveried footman shows them in. Mr. Collins clears his throat.
Later, we'll play cards.
Your ladyship.
Ah.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Collins bows obsequiously and motions for Charlotte and Lizzie to come forward. The room is opulent with oil paintings, lush carpets, drapes and gilt. Lady Catherine sits stiff-necked, upright, bejewelled and haughty. The three stand before her.
So you are Elizabeth Bennet?
I am, your ladyship.
This is my daughter.
She looks timid.
It's very kind of you to ask us, Lady Catherine.
£300.
Darcy enters the room.
Mr. Darcy? What are you doing here?
He bows, she curtsies.
Mr. Darcy, I had no idea we had the honour.
Miss Elizabeth, I'm a guest here.
You know my nephew?
Yes, ma'am, I had the pleasure of meeting your nephew in Hertfordshire.
Colonel Fitzwilliam, how do you do?
They all curtsy and bow again. At dinner...
Mr. Collins, you can't sit next to your wife. Move. Over there.
Lizzie and Mr. Collins walk around the lavish dining table to change places. Lizzie now sits next to Darcy. There is one servant per guest who helped the ladies sit first, then the gentlemen.
I trust your family is in good health, Miss Elizabeth.
They are, thank you. My eldest sister is currently in London. Perhaps you happen to see her there.
I haven't been fortunate enough, no.
You play the pianoforte, Miss Bennet?
A little, ma'am, and very poorly. Oh.
You draw?
No, not at all.
Your sisters, do they draw?
Not one.
It's very strange. I suppose you had no opportunity. Your mother should have taken you to town every spring for the benefit of the masters.
I'm sure my mother wouldn't have minded, but my father hates town.
Has your governess left you?
We never had a governess.
No governess? 5 daughters brought up at home without a governess. I never heard such a thing. Your mother must have been quite a slave to your education.
Not at all, Lady Catherine.
Your younger sisters, are they out in society?
Yes, ma'am, all.
All? What, all 5 out at once? Oh, that's very odd. And you only the second. The younger ones out before the elders are married. Your youngest sisters must be very young.
Yes, my youngest is not 16. But I think it would be very hard on younger sisters not to have their share of amusement because the elder is still unmarried. It would hardly encourage sisterly affection.
Upon my word, you give your opinion very decidedly for so young a person. Pray, what is your age?
With 3 younger sisters grown up, your ladyship can hardly expect me to own to it.
At last, Lizzie manages to take a spoonful of soup. A white cockatoo looks out from its cage.
Come, Miss Bennet, and play for us.
No, I beg you.
For music is my delight. In fact, there are few people in England who have more true enjoyment of music than myself. Or better natural taste. If I had ever learned, I should have been a great proficient. So would Anne, if her health would have allowed her.
Lady Catherine, I'm not afflicted with false modesty. When I say I play poorly...
Come, Lizzie. Her ladyship demands it.
Lady Catherine looks fiercely at Lizzie. After a moment, Lizzie slowly walks over to the pianoforte. Everyone is now in the candlelit drawing room. The ladies sit drinking tea. Darcy and Colonel Fitzwilliam stand with their hands behind their backs.
How does Georgiana get along, Darcy?
She plays very well.
I hope she practices. No excellence can be acquired without constant practice. I've told Mrs. Collins this. Though you have no instrument of your own, you're very welcome to come to Rosings and play on the pianoforte in the housekeeper's room.
Oh, thank you.
You'll be in nobody's way in that part of the house.
Darcy crosses the room to stand by the pianoforte.
You mean to frighten me, Mr. Darcy, by coming in all your state to hear me? But I won't be alarmed, even if your sister does play so well.
I am well enough acquainted with you, Miss Elizabeth, to know that I cannot alarm you, even should I wish it.
What was my friend like in Hertfordshire?
The Colonel joins them.
You really care to know? Prepare yourself for something very dreadful. The first time I saw him at the assembly, he danced with nobody at all. Even though gentlemen were scarce and there was more than one young lady sitting down without a partner.
I knew nobody beyond my own party.
Oh, and nobody can be introduced in a ballroom.
Fitzwilliam, I need you.
The Colonel gone, Darcy stays where he is. Lizzie looks challengingly at him.
I do not have the talent of conversing easily with people I have never met before.
Perhaps you should take your aunt's advice and practice.
Charlotte watches Darcy walk off from the corner of her eye. He stands looking at Lizzie's back before moving away completely. Next day at the rectory, Lizzie writes Jane's name in neat copper script with her quill pen. Suddenly, the door is flung open.
Mr. Darcy.
Agitated, he bows. She stands and politely curtsies.
Please do be seated.
He remains standing, playing with his gloves.
I'm afraid Mr. and Mrs. Collins have gone on business to the village.
He nods at her and continues to stand.
This is a charming house. I believe my aunt did a great deal to it when Mr. Collins first arrived.
I believe so. She could not have bestowed her kindness on a more grateful subject.
Lizzie waits for him to speak further.
Shall I call for some tea?
No. Good day, Miss Elizabeth. It's been a pleasure.
Hearing the latch, he abruptly leaves. It is Charlotte.
What on earth have you done to poor Mr. Darcy? I have no idea.
In church...
Every mind must have some counsellor to whom it may apply for consolation in distress. There are many conveniences which others can supply and which we cannot procure for ourselves. I have now principally in view those objects... which are only to be obtained through intercourse.
Delivering his sermon.
Forgive me, through the intercourse of friendship or civility. On such occasions, the proud man steps forth to meet you not with the cordiality of affection, but with the suspicion. The one who reconnoitres an enemy who is ready to...
So how long do you plan to stay in Kent, Colonel?
As long as Darcy chooses, I'm at his disposal.
Everyone appears to be at his disposal. And when he doesn't marry and secure a lasting convenience of that kind.
She would be a lucky woman.
Really?
Darcy is a most loyal companion. From what I heard on our journey here, he recently came to the rescue of one of his friends just in time.
What happened?
He saved the man from an imprudent marriage.
Who was the man?
Lizzie looks over at Darcy sitting in his pew.
His closest friend, Charles Bingley.
Her eyes fill with tears.
Did Mr. Darcy give a reason for this interference?
There were apparently strong objections to the lady.
What kind of objections? Her lack of fortune?
I think it was a family that was considered unsuitable.
So he separated them?
I believe so. I know nothing else.
Darcy looks up, straight at Lizzie. She turns away. Caught out by the storm, Lizzie runs across the bridge in Rosings Park and takes shelter under a pillared circular folly. Soaked to the skin, she leans against the wall and, catching her breath, removes her scarf. A river meanders far below. Everything is lush, wet and green. She is startled.
Miss Elizabeth, I have struggled in vain and I can bear it no longer. These past months have been a torment. I came to Rosings with the single object of seeing you. I had to see you. I have fought against my better judgment, my family's expectation, the inferiority of your birth, my rank and circumstance, all these things, and I'm willing to put them aside and ask you to end my agony.
I don't understand.
I love you. Most ardently. Please do me the honor of accepting my hand.
Sir, I appreciate the struggle you have been through, and I am very sorry to have caused you pain. Believe me, it was unconsciously done.
Is this your reply?
Yes, sir.
Are you laughing at me?
No.
Are you rejecting me?
I'm sure that the feelings which, as you told me, have hindered your regard will help you in overcoming it.
Might I ask why, with so little endeavour at civility, I am less repulsed?
And I might as well inquire why, with so evident a design of insulting me, you chose to tell me that you like me against your better judgment.
No, believe me,
If I was uncivil, then that is some excuse, but I have other reasons. You know I have.
What reasons?
Do you think that anything might tempt me to accept the man who has ruined, perhaps forever, the happiness of a most beloved sister? You deny it, Mr. Darcy, that you separated a young couple who loved each other, exposing your friend to the centre of the world for caprice, and my sister to its derision for disappointed hopes, and involving them both in misery of the acutest kind.
I do not deny it.
How could you do it?
Because I believed your sister indifferent to him.
Indifferent?
I watched them most carefully and realised his attachment was deeper than hers.
That's because she's shy.
Bingley, too, is modest and was persuaded she didn't feel strongly
for him. Because you suggested it.
I did it for his own good.
My sister hardly shows her true feelings to me. I suppose you suspect that his fortune had some bearing on the
matter. No, I wouldn't do your sister the dishonour, though it was suggested.
What was?
It was made perfectly clear that an advantageous marriage...
Did my sister give that impression?
No, there was, however, I have to admit, the matter of your family...
Our want of connection! Mr. Bingley didn't seem to vex himself
about
that.
No, it was more than that.
How, sir?
It was the lack of propriety shown by your mother, your three younger sisters, even on occasion your father. Forgive me. You and your sister, I must exclude.
And what about Mr. Wickham?
He takes a step closer.
Mr. Wickham?
What excuse can you give for your behaviour towards him?
You take an eager interest in that gentleman's
concerns.
He
told me of his misfortunes.
Oh, yes, his misfortunes have been very great indeed.
You ruin his chances and yet you treat him with sarcasm.
So this is your opinion of me. Thank you for explaining so fully. Perhaps these offences might have been overlooked had not your pride been hurt by my honesty in admitting scruples about our relationship. Could you expect me to rejoice in the inferiority of your circumstances?
And those are the words of a gentleman. From the first moment I met you, your arrogance and conceit, your selfish disdain for the feelings of others, made me realise that you were the last man in the world I could ever be prevailed upon to marry.
They are so close, so intent upon each other's faces, they could almost kiss. Darcy opens his mouth to speak, but does not. They drink each other with their eyes.
Forgive me, madam, for taking up so much of your time.
He turns and walks off, leaving her reeling from the blow. Aghast, she stumbles back a pace. Darcy does not look back. She stands quite still, the rain beating down all around her. Changed from her wet clothes, she sits on her bed in the rectory, and in her dressing gown, she walks downstairs to the dining room. She picks up a book on the table next to a place setting and begins to read. Whatever it is, it makes her laugh for a moment. She puts the book down and turns towards the window. Walking slowly towards it, she clasps her arms around her shoulders. She turns her head and catches sight of herself in the mirror on the wall. Walking towards it, she takes a good, long, hard look at herself. She is still staring morosely at her reflection when the light begins to change. It starts to get dark. The latch goes. Darcy comes into the rectory. He walks into the room. Lizzie doesn't move. Her expression doesn't change. He comes up behind her, holding a letter in his hand.
I came to leave you this.
He puts it down on the table. Lizzie remains frozen.
I shall not renew the sentiments which were so disgusting to you. But if I may, I will address the two offences you have laid against me.
She suddenly whirls round. Darcy is gone.
My father loved Mr. Wickham as a son. In consequence, he left him a generous living. But upon my father's death, Mr. Wickham announced he had no intention of taking orders. He demanded the value of the living which he was given, and which he gambled away within weeks.
Lizzie opens the letter and reads.
He then wrote demanding more money, which I refused, after which he severed all acquaintance. He came back to see us last summer, at which point he declared passionate love for my sister, whom he tried to persuade to elope with him. She is to inherit £30,000. When it was made clear he would never receive a penny of that inheritance, he disappeared. I will not attempt to convey the depth of Georgiana's despair. She was 15 years old. As to the other matter, that of your sister and Mr. Bingley, though the motives which governed me may to you appear insufficient, they were in the service of a friend.
Lizzie?
Lizzie holds the letter behind her back when Charlotte comes in.
Are you all right?
I hardly know.
At Longbourn, the sun is up as Lizzie comes in through the door, removing her coat.
Lizzie, how fortunate you have arrived. Your aunt and uncle are here to deliver Jane from London.
How is Jane?
She's in the drawing room.
I'm quite over him, Lizzie. If you passed me in the street, I'd hardly notice. London is so diverting. It's true. There's so much to entertain.
Jane's sweet face turns serious.
What news from Kent?
Nothing.
Lizzie looks blank.
He's not much to entertain.
Lizzie! Lizzie, come on!
Katie, stop making such a fuss.
She probably can't afford
it. Some better company.
Katie, what's the matter?
Just as much right as Lydia.
What if I could but go to Brighton?
And also because
Let
I'm 2 years older.
Lydia's been invited to go to Brighton with the Forsters.
Little sea bathing would set me up very nicely.
I should dine with the officers every night.
Please, Papa, don't let her go.
Lydia will never be easy until she's exposed herself in some public place or other, and we can never expect her to do it with so little inconvenience as under the present circumstances.
If you, dear father, do not take the trouble to check her, she will be fixed forever as the silliest and most determined flirt who ever made her family ridiculous. And Kitty will follow, as she always does.
Lizzie, we shall have no peace until she goes.
Peace? Is that really all you care about?
Colonel Forster's a sensible man. He will keep her out of any real mischief. And she's far too poor to be an object of prey to anyone.
Father, it's dangerous.
I am certain. The officers will find women better worth their while. Let us hope, in fact, that her stay in Brighton will teach her own insignificance. In fact, she can hardly grow any worse. If she does, we'd be obliged to lock her up for the rest of her life.
Mr. Bennett slowly twirls a dragonfly on a pin. In the kitchen...
Lizzie, dear, you'd be welcome to accompany us.
The Peak District is not Brighton, and officers are very thin on the ground, which may influence your decision.
Come to the Peak District with us, Lizzie, and get some fresh air.
The glories of nature. What are men compared to rocks and mountains?
Believe me, men are either eaten up with arrogance or stupidity. If they are amiable, they're so easily led, they have no minds of their own whatsoever.
Oh, take care, my love. That savours strongly of bitterness.
Lit by a candle, Lizzie lies in bed looking at the ceiling. Jane has her back to her.
I saw Mr. Darcy when I was at Rosings. Why did he not tell me?
Lizzie silently weeps.
Did he mention Mr. Bingley? No.
And blows out the candle.
No, he did not.
Dappled sunlight dances upon Lizzie's closed eyelids. She can feel the red warmth through her closed lids. Her eyelashes are thick, long and dark as the sunlight continues to play across them. She stands on the very edge of a cliff top, her cloak billowing out in the wind behind her, surveying the breathtaking view. A dramatic drop onto the flat golden plains of the Peak District. The gentle, undulating hills rolling away as far as the eye can see. Her countenance poised and composed. With her aunt and uncle, she tramps through the ferns. A horse and rider trots past.
Oh, what are men compared to rocks and mountains?
Or carriages that work.
They sit on the roots of a huge tree, picnicking.
Where exactly are we?
I think we're quite close to Pemberley.
Mr. Darcy's home.
That's the fellow. Very well stocked lake. I've a hankering to see it.
Oh, no, let's not. What, he's home? I'd rather not.
So what?
He's so rich.
By heavens, Lizzie, what a snob you are. Objecting to poor Mr. Darcy because of his wealth. The poor man can't help it.
He won't be there anyway. These great men are never at home.
A herd of stag are disturbed as the carriage drives along a well-kept avenue lined with trees, a river running alongside. Pemberley is dramatically set in front of a huge lake, the sunlight glinting off the sandy stone facade. The carriage draws to a halt. Overwhelmed by the view, Lizzie can't believe it, stands up and laughs before sinking back down. Her aunt and uncle also stand, mouths open, gaping. The housekeeper walks ahead as they cross a magnificent marbled black and white diamond-tiled floor. Lizzie trails slowly behind, gazing up at the ceiling. It's painted all over with semi-naked women tumbling about in the sky, lying on heavy black clouds. Their red and gold robes are flowing, the odd cherub dotted about with snatches of blue sky in between. It stretches the length of the great hall and up the grand and ornate staircase at the far end.
Keep up.
One room alone is filled with nothing but marble statues and objets d'art. Natural stone walls and filled with light, the room is calm and accentuates each piece. Lizzie gazes wondrously at a veiled Madonna for a long time.
Is your master much at Pemberley?
Not as much as I would wish, sir, for he dearly loves it here.
If he should marry, he might see
She passes a male reclining nude, his head thrown back, face to the sky, wearing a warrior's plumed helmet. And continues to walk amongst the displays, stopping every now and then at something that catches her eye. Now a female reclining nude, her pert bottom and curve of her marble back smooth and unlined. until she finds herself facing a bust of Darcy, looking every bit like the man himself. She stares at it wistfully. The housekeeper and the others come up behind her.
This is he, Mr. Darcy. A handsome face. Lizzie, is it a true likeness?
Does the young lady know Mr. Darcy?
Only a little.
Do you not think him a handsome man, miss?
Yes. Yes, I dare say he is.
Lizzie stands motionless.
This is his sister, Miss Georgiana. Oh, she is.
Her tearful brown eyes gazing on the bust.
Is she at home?
Separating herself from the others, Lizzie slowly walks into an adjoining room, with paintings around the marble fireplace and coral drapes against the tall windows. She slowly walks over to the fireplace, inspecting the room, and trails her fingers over some papers and objects on a table, running her hand over a marble, twin-faced head. Walking towards the window, she looks out over the balcony to the landscape garden beyond, a fountain set in the middle of a small round pond, the box hedges either side framing the immaculate lawns like a picture. Hearing some piano music, she slowly turns round. Tentatively, she crosses the richly furnished room towards a door in the far corner, slightly ajar. Peeping carefully through it, the reflection from the gilt mirror on the mantelpiece is of a young woman as she plays the pianoforte, her long blonde hair falling in ringlets down her back. Lizzie begins to smile. The sleeve of a man appears by the girl's side. Lizzie watches as the girl flings herself into his arms. Suddenly, they both turn towards the open door. Discovered, Lizzie flees, flying down the stone steps to the first floor terrace.
Miss Elizabeth!
Slowing to a dignified walk when Darcy follows her.
I thought you were in London.
No. No, I'm not.
No.
No, I came back a day early, some you're... business with my steward. Yeah.
I'm in Devonshire with my aunt and uncle.
And are you having a pleasant trip?
Very pleasant. Tomorrow we go to Matlock.
Tomorrow? Are you staying at Lambton?
Yes, at the Rose and Crown.
Yes.
I'm so sorry to intrude. They said that the house was open for visitors. I had no idea.
May I see you back to the village?
No. Fond of walking.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Goodbye, Mr. Darcy.
She bobs a curtsy. He bows and stands watching her as she quickly walks away from him, keeping as much dignity as she can. She marches across the fields towards Lambton. Coming into the Rose and Crown, she suddenly ducks behind a velvet curtain. Mr. Darcy is conversing with her aunt and uncle, who smile agreeably at him. She watches them from her hiding place. When he is gone, Lizzie comes out and joins them.
Lizzie, we've just
just met Mr. Darcy. You didn't tell us that you'd seen him. He's asked us to dine with him tomorrow. He was very civil, was he not?
Very civil.
Not at all how you'd painted him.
To dine with him.
There's something pleasant about his mouth when he speaks.
You don't mind delaying our journey another day, do you?
He particularly wants you to meet his sister.
Lizzie plays with her lower lip. In the drawing room at Pemberley, Darcy stands facing the pianoforte watching his sister. Her fingers nimbly run up and down the keys. She is totally absorbed.
Miss Elizabeth!
She runs over to Lizzie and curtsies.
My sister, Miss Georgiana.
My brother has told me so much about you. I feel as if we are friends already.
Oh, thank you.
What a beautiful pianoforte. My brother gave it to me. He shouldn't have.
Yes, I should.
Oh, very well, then.
Easily persuaded, is she not?
Your unfortunate brother once had to put up with my playing for a whole evening.
But he says you play so well.
Then he has perjured himself most profoundly.
No, I said played quite well.
Oh, quite well is not very well. I'm satisfied.
Darcy has been smiling at Lizzie. Georgiana looks at him quizzically.
Mr. Gardner, are you fond of fishing?
Well, very much so.
Can I persuade you to accompany me to the lake this afternoon? It's very well stocked and its occupants left in peace for far too long.
I would be delighted.
Do you play duets, Miss Elizabeth? Only when forced. Brother, you must force her.
Splendid fishing, good company. What a capital fellow.
Thank you so much, Mr. Darcy.
They return to the inn.
A letter for you, madam. Oh, it's from Jane.
Lizzie happily takes the letter. Her aunt and uncle retire to their room with Darcy, who paces the floor. Lizzie joins them, utterly distraught. Then rushes off to the other side of the partition, out of sight. Darcy sits, only to rise again when Lizzie comes back more composed. She holds the open letter in her hand.
It's the most dreadful news. Lydia has run away. With Mr. Wickham. They are gone from Brighton to Lord knows where. She has no money, no connections. I fear she's lost forever.
Darcy comes towards her.
This is my fault. If only I had exposed Wickham when I should.
No, this is my fault. I might have prevented all this merely by being open with my sisters.
Has anything been done to recover her?
My father has gone to London, but I know very well that nothing can be done. We have not the smallest hope.
Would I could help you?
So I think it is too late.
This is grave indeed. I will leave you. Goodbye.
I'm afraid we must go at once. I will join Mr. Bennet and find Lydia before she ruins the family forever.
In the dead of night, the carriage gallops off over the hills. There is no moon to light its way. Lizzie sits miserably inside, her face half in shadow. At Longbourn, Mrs. Bennet has taken to her bed, surrounded by all the girls. She fans herself. The daylight streams brightly into the room.
Oh, why did the Forsters let her out of their sight? I always said they were unfit to take charge of her.
Now she's ruined.
You're all ruined. Who will take you now with a fallen sister? Poor Mr. Bennet will now have to fight the perfidious Wickham and then be killed.
He hasn't found him yet, Mama.
And then Mr. Collins will turn us out before he's cold in his grave.
Do not be so alarmed, Mama. Our uncle has gone to London and is helping in search.
Lydia must know what this must be doing to my nerves. Such flutterings and spasms all over me. My baby, Lydia. My baby. How could she do such a thing to her poor mama?
You can't do that. It's such a baby.
Kitty, give it to me.
No.
It's just Papa. It's in Uncle's writing.
my breath.
It's in Uncle's writing.
Getting out of the carriage, he takes the letter and reads, Lizzie peering over his shoulder.
Found them.
They married.
I can't make out his sketch.
Henry, they married. They will be if Father will settle £100 a year on her. That is Wickham's condition.
£100?
You will agree to this, Father.
Yes, I'll agree. God knows how much your uncle must have laid on that wretched man.
What do you mean, Father?
No man in his senses would marry Lydia under so slight a temptation as £100 a year. Your uncle must have been very generous.
Do you think it a large sum?
Wickham's a fool if he accepts less than £10,000.
10,000? Heaven forbid.
Father!
Lydia married. And at 15, too.
Ring the bell, Kitty. I must put on my things and tell Lady Lucas. Oh, to see her face. And tell the servants they will have a bowl of punch.
We should thank our uncle, Mama.
And so he should help. He's far richer than us and has no children. Daughter, married.
Is that really all you think about?
When you have 5 daughters, Lizzie, tell me what else will occupy your thoughts, and then perhaps you will understand.
You don't know what he's like.
Lydia!
She smugly steps down from the carriage.
We passed Sarah Sims in her carriage. So I took off my glove and let my hand just rest so she might see the ring. And I bowed and smiled like an infant.
Carrying Lydia's hat box, Wickham alights and bows to Mr. Bennet.
You must all go to Brighton. That is the place to get husbands. I hope you have half my good luck.
Lydia. I want to hear every little detail, Lydia, dear.
Mama. Beautiful.
I've been enlisted in a regiment in the north of England, sir.
I'm glad to hear it.
Near Newcastle. Mm-hmm. We travel there next week.
Can I come and stay with you?
That is out of the question.
Well, Monday morning came and I was in such a fuss.
I don't want to hear.
There was my aunt preaching and talking away as if she was reading a sermon. She was horrid unpleasant.
Can't you understand why?
But I didn't hear a word because I was thinking of my dear Wickham. I longed to know whether he'd been married in his blue coat.
The north of England, I believe, boasts some spectacular scenes.
My uncle's called away from the church on business, and I thought, who's to be our best man if he doesn't come back? Lucky he did come back, or I would have had to ask Mr. Darcy, but I don't think he'd like...
Mr. Darcy?
I forgot. But I shouldn't have said a word.
Mr. Darcy was at your wedding.
He was the one that discovered us. He paid for the wedding. Wickham's commission. Everything. But don't tell anyone, he told me not to tell.
Mr. Darcy.
Stop it, Lizzie. Mr. Darcy's not half as high minded as he sometimes.
Lizzie looks like she can't believe what she's just heard.
Kitty, have you seen my ring?
Write to me often, my dear.
Married women never have much time for writing.
No, I dare say you won't. When I married your father, there didn't seem to be enough hours in the day.
Lizzie pointedly ignores Wickham's bow.
My sisters may write to me, but they have nothing else to do.
Lydia skips out after him. Lizzie watches them from the window with her mother.
There's nothing so bad as parting with one's children. One seems so forlorn without them.
Lizzie hugs her mother comfortingly around the shoulders. The carriage rolls away. The Bennets are now in Meryton.
No matter what your father does with all that ink.
Mrs. Bennet. Did you hear the news, madam? Mr. Bingley is returning to Netherfield.
Mr. Bingley?
Mrs. Nichols is ordering a haunch of pork. She expects him tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Not that I care about him. Mr. Bingley's nothing to us. I'm sure I never want to see him again, no. We shan't mention a word about it. Is it quite certain he's coming?
Yes, madam. I believe he's alone. His sister remains in town.
Why he thinks we should be interested, I've no idea. Come along, girls. Let's go home at once, Mary. And tell Mr. Bennet the impudence of the man. I wonder he dares show his face.
It's all right, Lizzie. I'm just glad he comes alone, because then we shall see less of him. Not that I'm afraid of myself, but I dread other people's remarks. Oh, I'm sorry.
Jane bumps into a man on the corner and apologises. It's a hot afternoon as Bingley and Darcy walk across country towards Longbourn. Mrs. Bennet is lying lazily on the settee, swinging her foot and humming to herself. Her eyes are closed, and a small plate of titbits rests on her stomach. Lizzie is reading by the fireplace, and Jane and Mary sit at the table. Kitty bursts into the room.
He's here! He's here! He's at the door! Mr. Bingley!
Mr. Bingley? Oh, my goodness! Everybody behave naturally! And whatever you do, do not appear overbearing!
Look, there's someone with
Mama.
Them!
Mama! Mama! Mr. What's his name? The pompous one from before.
Mr. Darcy? The very insolence of it. What does he think of coming here? Keep still, Jane. Mary, put that away at once. Find some useful employment. Oh, my Lord. I shall never see you, sir. I'm sure I shall.
Kitty. Kitty.
Can't get this here.
Mary, the ribbons. The ribbons. The ribbons.
Mary, sit down at once. Mary!
Mr. Darcy and Mr. Bingley, ma'am.
The now decorous Bennets rise as one as the gentleman is shown into the room. Order has been restored, everything in its proper place. They bow, the ladies all curtsy.
How very glad we are to see you, Mr. Bingley. There have been a great many changes since you went away. Miss Lucas is married and settled. And one of my own daughters, too. You will have seen it in the papers, though it was not put in as it ought to have been. Very short. Nothing about her family.
Yes, yes, I did hear of it. I offer my congratulations.
But it is very hard to have my Lydia taken away from me. Mr. Wickham has been transferred to Newcastle, wherever that is.
Do you hope to stay long in the country, Mr. Bingley?
Just a few weeks. For the shooting.
Oh, when you've killed all your own birds, Mr. Bingley, I beg you will come here and shoot as many as you please.
Thank you.
Mr. Bennet will be vastly happy to oblige you, and will save all the best of the coveys for you.
Excellent.
Are you well, Mr. Darcy?
Quite well, thank you.
I hope that the weather stays fine for your sport.
I return to town tomorrow.
So soon?
My Jane looks well, does she not?
She does indeed.
Bingley gazes at her. Jane is calm. He swallows.
Well, we must be going, I think. Darcy, it's been very pleasant to see you all again. Miss Elizabeth, Miss Bennet.
You must come again, for when you were in town last winter, you promised to have a family dinner with us. I've not forgot, you see. At least three courses.
Bingley smiles nervously by the door and leaves as quickly as he can.
Excuse me.
Bowing, Darcy follows after him. Lizzie looks bereft.
Most extraordinary.
Jane sinks onto the settee, apparently composed. Outside...
We were going to walk in, and she was going to say, sit down. So, I feel...
In a real lather, Bingley paces up and down beside the lake. Darcy stands to one side, watching him.
Oh, it's a disaster, isn't it?
Mr. Bingley?
I go in.
I'm glad that's over. At least now we can meet as indifferent acquaintances.
Oh, yes.
No, you cannot think me so weak as to be in danger now.
I think you are in great danger of making him as much in love with you as ever.
I'm sorry, though, that he came with Mr. Darcy.
Let's say that.
Why ever not?
Lizzie looks dreamy.
Jane. I've been so blind.
What do you mean?
Look, it's him. He's back. He's come again.
From the window, Kitty watches Bingley climb the front steps. He is alone.
I know this is all very untoward, but I would like to request the privilege of speaking to Miss Bennet. Alone.
Everybody to the kitchen. Immediately. Except you, Jane, dear. Of course. Oh, Mr. Bingley, it is so good to see you again so soon.
She curtsies on the way out, so does Lizzie, closing the door behind her. Bingley and Jane stand gazing at one another on opposite sides of the room. He slowly walks towards her, dropping his hat down on a small table and stopping within a few feet of her.
First, I must tell you I've been the most unmitigated and comprehensive ass.
He solemnly goes down onto one knee, looking up at her. In the hall, Lizzie leans against the wall. Mr. Bennet comes along. Mrs. Bennet is glued to the door with the others. He joins them. Unnoticed, Lizzie quietly sneaks away. In the drawing room, Jane begins to cry.
Yes. 1,000 times, yes.
The Lord for that! I thought it would never happen!
Elbows on knees, Lizzie hugs herself deep in thought under the massive tree opposite the house. Darcy stands in a nearby field looking at Longbourn before turning slowly and walking away. He stops and looks back at it, his brows knitted together as if in pain before moving on. The upper windows of Longbourn shine out into the night. Through the window, Mr. and Mrs. Bennet are lying in bed.
I am confident they will do well together. Their tempers are much alike. They will be treated assiduously by their servants and be so generous with the rest. They will always exceed their income.
Exceed their income. Yes, 5,000 a year. Oh. I knew she could not be so beautiful for nothing.
Moving along to the next window, Mary is reading to Kitty, who sits by the window yawning and stroking the cat.
Mind glows with the warmth of sensibility and whose arguments result from conviction. She must feel the influence of those passions and emotions which she wishes to inspire. An assumed character.
Through the landing window, Betsy slowly climbs the stairs, singing to herself. Through the last window, Lizzie and Jane sit on the bed in their night clothes.
Totally ignorant of my being in town in the spring.
How did he account for it?
He thought me indifferent.
Unfathomable.
No doubt poisoned by his pernicious sister.
Bravo. I think that's the most unforgiving speech you've ever made.
Oh, Lizzie, if I could but see you so happy, if there was such another man for you.
Lizzie looks rueful.
Perhaps Mr. Collins has a cousin.
Sir.
What?
Maybe he's changed his mind.
Coming!
The whole household comes downstairs.
Yes?
Lady Catherine.
Without waiting, she walks straight in. Everyone curtsies.
The rest of your offspring, I presume?
All but one. The youngest has been lately married, your ladyship. And my eldest was proposed to only this afternoon.
You have a very small garden, madam.
Could I offer you a cup of tea, perhaps, Elizabeth?
Absolutely not. I need to speak to Miss Elizabeth Bennet alone, as a matter of urgency.
All eyes turn to Lizzie. In the drawing room...
You can be at no loss, Miss Bennet, to understand why I am here.
Indeed, you are mistaken. I cannot account for this honour at all.
Miss Bennet, I warn you, I am not to be trifled with. A report of a most alarming nature has reached me, that you intend to be united with my nephew, Mr. Darcy. I know this to be a scandalous falsehood. Though not wishing to injure him by supposing it possible, I instantly set off to make my sentiments known.
If you believed it to be impossible, I wonder you took the trouble of coming so far.
To hear it contradicted, Miss Bennet.
Your coming will be rather a confirmation, surely, if indeed such a report exists.
If? Do you then pretend to be ignorant of it? Has it not been industriously circulated by yourself?
I have never heard of it.
And can you declare there is no foundation for it?
Do not pretend to possess equal frankness with your ladyship. You may ask a question which I may choose not to answer.
This is not to be borne. Has my nephew made you an offer of marriage?
Your ladyship has declared it to be impossible.
Let me be understood. Mr. Darcy is engaged to my daughter. Now what have you to say?
Only this, if that is the case, you can have no reason to suppose he would make an offer to me.
You selfish girl! This union has been planned since their infancy. Do you think it can be prevented by a young woman of inferior birth, whose own sister's elopement resulted in a scandalously patched-up marriage, only achieved at the expense of your uncle? Heaven and earth, are the shades of Pemberley to be thus polluted? Now tell me once and for all, are you engaged to him?
I am not.
And will you promise never to enter into such an engagement?
I will not, and I certainly never shall. You have insulted me in every possible way and can now have nothing further to say. I must ask you to leave immediately.
Opening the door, all the Bennets are outside.
Good night.
I have never been thus treated in my entire life.
She storms out.
Lizzie, what on earth is going on?
It's misunderstanding.
Lizzie?
For once in your life, leave me alone!
She rushes upstairs to her room. Lying awake in the dark, unable to sleep, she rises from the bed, leaving a sleeping Jane oblivious. She sits at the dressing table, a single plait falling over her shoulder, a flickering candle, the only light. She turns her head at the birdsong, listening. Outside, dawn has not quite broken. The mist is rolling over the land. Lizzie, who can hardly be seen, a dark, silhouetted figure, tramps across the grass in her dressing gown. She covers the ground slowly, a murky figure, her arms folded across her body. The flash of her nightdress is as white as snow. It kicks out from the bottom of her dark gown at the back with each step she takes. She heads towards a narrow little footbridge. It crosses a hidden stream full of tall rushes and grass as the sky begins to get lighter. Crossing the bridge, lost in thought, she looks up and sees a figure in the distance, tramping across the meadow towards her. She stops dead. A tall, manly figure, the mist still quite thick as he strides firmly along, his long frock coat billowing around his ankles as he walks. His white collarless shirt open at the neck, the hairs on his chest lightly dusting his throat, his hair slightly ruffled by the breeze. Lizzie stands there, transfixed with her big brown eyes as she watches him getting closer and closer.
Yes, she was here.
How can I ever make amends for such behaviour?
After what you have done for Lydia, and I suspect for Jane also, it is I who should be making amends.
You must know. Surely you must know it was all for you.
His face is drawn.
You are too generous to travel with me. I believe you spoke with my aunt last night and it has taught me to hope.
as I'd scarcely allowed myself before. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me so at once. My affections and wishes have not changed. But one word from you will silence me forever.
Lizzie's eyes twinkle. Her face glows.
If, however, your feelings have changed, I would have to tell you. You have bewitched me, body and soul, and I love, and love, and love you. And never wish to be parted from you from this day on.
His eyes ache with sincerity. Lizzie gazes at him adoringly, takes a step towards him and raises his hand and kisses his knuckles.
Well then. Your hands are cold.
Wordlessly, Darcy nods and slowly caresses her cheek with his other hand. The sunlight bursts between them, lighting them up in a golden glow. He slowly inclines his head towards her until their foreheads touch, eyes closed, gathering strength from each other. Lizzie paces anxiously up and down outside her father's study, leaning against the wall in sweet torture. Darcy gives her a strained smile as they pass.
Shut the door, please, Elizabeth.
She can hardly take her sparkling eyes off his tense face as she impishly closes the door.
Lizzie, are you out of your senses? I thought you hated the man.
No, Papa.
He's rich, to be sure. He would have more fine carriages than Jane. That make you happy?
Have you no other objection than your belief in my indifference?
None at all. We all know him to be a proud, unpleasant sort of fellow. But this would be nothing if you really liked him.
I do like him.
Yeah.
I love him.
Mr. Bennet looks up, shocked.
He's not proud. I was wrong. I was entirely wrong about him. You don't know him, Papa, if I told you what he was really like, what he's done.
What has he done?
Darcy patiently waits outside the back door. Mrs. Bennet and Jane watch him through the window as he gets up and walks back and forth.
But she doesn't like him. I thought she didn't like him.
So did I, so did we all.
We must have been wrong.
Won't be the first time, will it?
No. Nor the last, I dare say.
Good Lord.
The truth revealed, Mr. Bennet sits heavily.
I must pay him back.
No. You mustn't tell anyone. He wouldn't want it. We misjudged him, Papa, me more than anyone, in every way, not just in this matter. I've been nonsensical. He's been a fool about Jane, about so many other things, but then so have I. You see, he and I are so similar. We've been so stubborn. Papa,
he smiles tearfully with her.
You really do love him, don't you?
Very much.
I cannot believe that anyone can deserve you. But it seems I am overruled. So, I heartily give my consent.
Lizzie leans over the desk and hugs him warmly.
I could not have parted with you, my Lizzie, to anyone less worthy.
She kisses him on the forehead and happily hurries from the room. Mr. Bennet is quite overcome. He sits there chuckling and quietly ruminating to himself.
any young men come for Mary or Kitty, for heaven's sake, send them in. I'm quite at my leisure.
The end.